Greetings, fans of the Raw Retrospective. This is at Wrestling Savant from MondayNightWar.com. Just sending a thank you your way for tuning in. A brief disclaimer before we get to episode 3. We experienced some audio issues that nearly caused us to lose this recording, but it is ready for you to enjoy in its entirety. Some great things to look forward to in the new year, as not only are we on the road to WrestleMania, but the Monday Night War podcast series has upgraded to new crystal clear professional audio equipment for your listening pleasure. So bear with us on this one nearly lost in time episode 3. I hope you have as much fun listening as we did recording. Here it goes. Welcome to episode 3. This is the Raw Retrospective, part of the Monday Night War podcast series. Find us at MondayNightWar.com. I am at Wrestling Savant on both Twitter and Reddit. He is at Flawless Brian. Go to MondayNightWar.com for the full experience that the Monday Night War podcast series has to offer. There you can also connect with the show's Twitter and Facebook page, as well as the RSS feed link that you can use to stay up to date with each new recording as they are posted. The Monday Night War podcast series is available using any device. Just plug the link to our feed into your preferred method of subscribing, downloading, and listening to podcasts. Now let's set the table. With the WWE Network, we can now relive the experience of both Monday Night Raw and WCW Monday Nitro from their humble beginnings. As a companion to these broadcasts, I, along with my cast of friends, we'll take you back in time through the lens of 2015 with some lifelong fans that were all watching then and still watch today. It will be a blast. I promise there will be plenty of insight and laughs. Watching along with us is optional. Just hang on and enjoy the ride. So with that out of the way, let's get started. Brian, how goes it?
It's going great, man. I'd like to add a life event, actually, to this podcast, if I can do that.
Sure.
I just got engaged here, so...
Congratulations!
Thank you. I'd like to tell all the lady listeners out there, you know what that means. That's right. I just got a lot more attractive.
This is episode 3 of Monday Night Raw. The original air date is Monday, January 25th, 1993. Brian, are you ready to hit play?
Let's do it.
There's that familiar siren. The show opens up outside the Manhattan Center with Sean Mooney, freezing, stating that he is anxiously awaiting the arrival of Repo Man, who just at that moment happens to crash right on time onto the scene riding shotgun in a flatbed tow truck. Repo Man has Macho Man's fluorescent colored hat and proclaims that having this piece of Savage's attire is as good as repossessing a new Cadillac.
Yeah, yeah, yeah!
We are ringside with Vince McMahon, Rob Bartlett, and can you believe it, Bobby the Brain Heenan. Bobby is substituting for Randy Savage as he gears up for what is sure to be a barn burner momentarily with the aforementioned Repo Man. In fact, I'm looking at this right now, Savage jumping Repo Man during his entrance to get an early edge on this match. The quality of commentary has already increased tenfold over episode 1 and 2 of Raw with the Brain out there, and we are just getting started.
Good to have him back. Hopefully he stays around.
I agree. There is chemistry, obviously, between Vince and Bobby, so much so that while Bartlett seems to be confused, switching back and forth, rooting for both Macho Man, his broadcast partner, and then Repo Man, Bobby asks Vince, "Where did you get this guy?" And Vince replies, "If you must know, we picked him up right off the subway."
That's pretty much how they got the ring girls, too. I think they picked a couple of them up at the same time. And, yeah, Bartlett, he at one point says, "If I had hair like that, I'd wear a hat, too." Obviously implying the hat was Macho Man's, right? So who else would be wearing Macho Man's hat? And, of course, Vince doesn't miss a step and says, "Oh, the Repo Man wouldn't like that if he heard you talking about his hair like that." Immediately covering for one of the top faces in the company and also his broadcast partner, ripping on the Macho Man's mane. That's just something that you don't do, man. You don't mess with the do. You pretend those three bald spots aren't there. You pretend he's 6 foot. So Bartlett's already kind of violated all of Vince's little do not do lists in the first match.
Yeah, and let's keep in mind that Randy Savage wasn't exactly taking his baldness in stride. I think that was probably a touchy subject. Vince, always the pro, covering from Bartlett, asks Vince if Repo Man is wearing a flesh-colored beanie as he makes several attempts at impersonating Macho Man's voice throughout this match.
Right, he busts it. Now, I know last week I set the new podcast record for most worst impressions ever. For a minute, I thought, is that Macho on commentary? But he was in the ring, so he was practicing his impressions kind of in an ill-timed. Speaking of ill-timed, I'm looking at right now Repo Man with Macho Man in some kind of, I guess nowadays you'd call it a rear mount, you know, with the hooks in, right? So he's got the legs hooked. He's applying a chin lock from his back with his legs grapevined around the svelte midsection of the Macho Man. His little Lone Ranger mask is pulled up an inch or so, so it's like the bottom of the mask is completely blocking his eyes. Yet somehow he knows the cameras are right on him to kind of say some lines and work the mic, you know, work the camera. So like you said, all in, even when the man can't see, he's working his gimmick.
I'm telling you, man, Barry Darso is a pro. Underrated performer.
Very much so. And it looks like he's got about 50 pounds on Macho Man in this match. And I didn't really remember Darso being that huge post-demolition. But maybe it's just Macho Man. Now, he is wearing black along with his floral pattern. And it's kind of like that wet look that a lot of 90s material had. Like if you kind of took, I don't know, like a pant leg off of Scott Steiner's singlet and made it into a whole outfit, or the head shrinkers. It's kind of like they just bought a bunch of this bulk material. But Macho Man wearing this black, slick... Man, maybe I should start rocking something like that. He looks pretty svelte.
I'm just now noticing that Repo Man is wearing kick pads. I don't know of any kicks that are in his repertoire, but what do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that with the combination of the knee pads that look to be made out of recycled tires.
Yeah.
Apparently, Repo Man was trying to, with the kick pads and the recycled tire knee pads, he was trying to reduce his footprint on the environment while also increasing his footprint in his opponent. All in. All in Barry Darso. That's his new nickname.
We'll just add that to the series of gimmicks that he had over the years.
Why not? He's got room for a couple more.
Can we name some of these right now while we have this match going on? I know I'm good for at least, it's like name that tune. I can name at least five Barry Darso gimmicks.
Go ahead. I'll see if I can add any.
Repo Man, Smash, Crusher, Khrushchev.
Right. Was that his first?
Well, prior to Crusher Khrushchev, he wrestled as Barry Darso in like these Daisy Dukes, but it only was for a couple of episodes in whatever region that was in, maybe AWA. Then there is Hole in One, Barry Darso, right. The Blacktop Bully.
And that was my fave, that crazy unsanctioned match, the first... And this is like way into the future here, so sorry, guys. Where he wrestles, is it Dustin Rhodes that he wrestles in that 18-wheeler
it is.
Match? That was pretty. That had to have been the highlight of his post-demolition career. The very first unsanctioned. That might have been the first match on the first unsanctioned, because I think they had to, they closed like a two-lane highway in like Buford, Georgia, or something like that, right? And not like they needed to. There was no traffic in that stretch anyway. I think that's where they filmed The Walking Dead and areas around that. And I just remember they had, like, chicken wire, and it had a bunch of straw. What are those things that the farm dudes always lift to get all strong, right? The bales and all that. And, oh, man, look at that. And just as I'm talking about that, Macho with a roll-up puts this feud to an end and recovers his hat, which doesn't match this outfit. And, you know, if I'm Macho and I'm going through my closet of attire and I'm all like, man, you know, I got to win that hat back. Maybe I'm going to wear the outfit that went with the hat, but he chose not to, so maybe that outfit was repossessed too. I don't know.
Macho Man Randy Savage is victorious in his first match on Monday Night Raw. Back from a break, Bobby Heenan acts like he is not aware that the cameras are rolling and his mic is on while he asks the Raw ring card girl to give him a honk later. Here's a clip.
There's a kiss for you too, sweetheart. Hey, give me a honk later on. I'm at area code... Wait, are we on?
It's coming. It's coming Sunday afternoon, April 4th. It's coming to the Palace. WrestleMania is coming to Caesar's Palace, the most opulent, splendiferous hotel and casino in existence. Proudly presents the most spectacular pay-per-view event of all time, WrestleMania. Las Vegas has become the new family entertainment capital of the world, and your family will experience excitement, fun and action as never before as WrestleMania comes to the crown jewel of Las Vegas, Caesar's Palace. Relive the legend at the home of champions on Sunday afternoon, April 4th. It's WrestleMania.
And we are back. They roll right into a WrestleMania 9 promo. Holy smokes, this is great. He uses what I'll refer to from here on out as classic Vince-isms when describing Caesar's Palace. Words such as splendiferous, adjective, of great splendor. And my favorite, opulent, adjective, rich and luxurious or lavish. Only Vince, I mean, this guy must have the most extended vocabulary. I like to say that my vocabulary, even in 2015, is all a direct result of listening to Vince McMahon on play-by-play for all of my formulative years.
Sometimes I'll yell, "What a maneuver," when watching football and there's a touchdown.
Speaking of what a maneuver, we are keeping tally in each episode of how many times Vincent Kennedy McMahon utters that phrase. I don't think I caught one on this episode, which is surprising, but that doesn't mean that we aren't going to keep listening out for it in future episodes. He also proclaims in this ad that Las Vegas has become the new family fun capital of the world, which is right in line with what was happening in the region at this point in time. Las Vegas spent a better part of the 90s trying to attract families by transforming itself into this kid-friendly and entertainment paradise as the city faced new competition from a boom in legal gambling on riverboats and Indian reservations. The city's gambling revenues plunged, declining by almost $500 million in 1992 alone. But children don't gamble, Brian, and they can distract their parents from gambling, which is why this era of Las Vegas came and went as the area returned to its reputation of Sin City, but not before WrestleMania 9 had its place in time.
I'm thankful for its place in wrestling history. And host in Mania, and I can remember being in the middle of the country and thinking, why are they having it out there? Where is Los Angeles? Where's Las Vegas? I don't think I'd been west of maybe Moline, Illinois, or the Quad Cities of Iowa. So it was kind of a drag. I think it was out there a couple years. Wasn't it out there for maybe like 2 out of a 3-year span? It was out west somewhere.
Well, yeah, WrestleMania 7 was originally scheduled to be held in the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, but WWF decided to move the event to the adjacent Los Angeles Memorial Sports Arena, a big drop-off. The LA Memorial Coliseum would hold over 100,000 people, which would have broken all attendance records, which they are still trying to break to this day, with WrestleMania 32 being in Dallas. WWF stated the reason for the venue change was that there were security concerns in the wake of Sergeant Slaughter's portrayal of an Iraqi sympathizer during the Gulf War. In actuality, poor advance ticket sales indicated the company would have major difficulty filling that stadium. The announced attendance of WrestleMania 7 ended up being just a mere 16,158.
Jeez.
Check this out. Newly domesticated Kamala the Ugandan Giant makes his first appearance in the Manhattan Center with his new friend, the Reverend Slick. Did I ever tell you, Brian, that as a small child, I was deathly afraid of Kamala's entrance music?
No, but I know a couple of friends of mine that were afraid of the mask, you know, and then he would take it off, kind of totem-looking thing. They would be scared, but yeah, I seem to remember his entrance music. It was something like, or something like that, right?
It was frightening, so the mask probably had something to do with it as well. Kamala's opponent is the Brooklyn Brawler, a man who is still employed by WWE to this very day. Also still on the WWE payroll is the referee for this matchup, a young Mike Chioda.
Nice, and if I recall correctly, Brooklyn Brawler Steve Lombardi was actually one of the kimchis that was Kamala's handler when he was a monster, a heel. And so now that he is domesticated and has no use for a handler, when in fact he just needs a little jive soul bro in his life.
Kamala, marveling at the positive crowd reaction that he is receiving, acts as if he is not aware of just exactly how to pin his opponent, covering the brawler while he is face down. He eventually gets it right for the 1, 2, 3.
I loved that element. I totally loved it. You know, the fans would get behind Slick and they would be doing this rollover gesture and he'd look around all buggy-eyed and he'd roll the guy over. And then the one time he actually does splash him when he's on his back, he rolls him over to his belly. Like he finally, you know, got the gist of rolling the guy over, but when he was in the wrong position. I loved it. I loved Kamala. Pretty agile. He could do those kind of savate kicks and he would do the head chops and do the belly slap and
ah. Vladimir the Superfan sighting on episode 3. That makes it 3 shows in a row. That's a streak that will most likely continue. He tried to get sneaky this week, Brian. He's wearing a baseball cap, as if he could pull a fast one on my highly trained eye. Check out the archives of MondayNightWar.com. There is a photo of some of the cast of characters that the Monday Night War podcast series has to offer as we meet Vladimir in Miami at WrestleMania 28 Access. It was a dream come true.
Right, and he kind of stands out here as I'm looking at this crowd. I see a lot of turtlenecks with gold chains on top of them, mustaches. I see a lot of mullets, a lot of glasses. I think these tickets may have been free, I don't know, to fill some seats here. So it looks kind of like a Lonely Island video or something. So Vladimir kind of stands out. And I think there's someone next to him wearing a shower cap, or they just have really cool kind of Butch Reed hair.
Vince gets up from the broadcast booth to interview Kamala and Slick. Slick gives props to the crowd for being the driving force behind Kamala's new positive demeanor. He also condemns the former handler of Kamala, Kim Chi, who ironically was also played by none other than the Brooklyn Brawler.
Coming full circle.
That's right. Well, it's the post-Royal Rumble report. Gene Okerlund runs down the results of the big event from the night prior to Raw. Bret Hart retained the WWF World Heavyweight Championship over Razor Ramon. Yokozuna won the Royal Rumble, of course. The Narcissist was unveiled and identified as Lex Luger. Giant Gonzalez also debuted, attacking The Undertaker as they build to WrestleMania 9.
Didn't really care for the anatomically correct airbrushed bodysuit with strategically placed patches of fur. Man, if he could only wrestle worth a lick. I think he's deceased now. Rest in peace. No pun intended with the Undertaker matchup there. You know, I didn't even think about that. But Giant Gonzalez, man, like, had to have been the biggest guy in pro wrestling.
7'7" to be exact, making him the tallest Argentine basketball player in history.
Probably one of the top 10 tallest in the world, I think. I think 7'4", 7'5" is kind of hard to hit. I think he had a vertical leap of like 3 inches, which was probably why his basketball career wasn't that amazing.
Giant Gonzalez used to be known as El Gigante in WCW. He took part in the 1988 NBA draft, being chosen by the Atlanta Hawks in the third round, the number 54 selection. In 1989, Hawks owner Ted Turner offered Gonzalez a job as a professional wrestler in World Championship Wrestling, which, of course, Turner also owned. After a year of training, Gonzalez was introduced to fans, of course, as El Gigante. On May 19th, 1990, at the pay-per-view Capital Combat, he was wearing shorts, he competed as a fan favorite, and they billed him as being close to 8 feet tall. They weren't one for specifics.
And they gave him a cool tinfoil headband years before Farouk would actually have a tinfoil helmet. Yeah, I think, he kind of had a knee problem or something, didn't he? Is that why he got out of basketball and then went into wrestling, and the rest is history?
Over the next 2 years, he feuded with Ric Flair for the WCW World Championship, participated in the Chamber of Horrors match that you mentioned, Brian, 1991, and also had a date with Missy Hyatt right on TV on the Superstation. He participated in a feud with Sid Vicious, then moving on to the one-man gang. The point of the feud was to determine who the real giant of WCW was. He also had a cross-promotional stint in New Japan Pro Wrestling before signing with the World Wrestling Federation in 1993. Back in the arena, Bobby continues to catcall the Raw ring card girls, this time asking if she has a friend for Rob Bartlett, preferably with an overbite. Here's a clip.
Hey, Toots, come over here. I gave you my number into a room I'm in. By the way, do you have a girlfriend, something for Bartlett, maybe with an overbite and maybe a big hump on her? But I don't know.
We're
come
back.
You know, in episode 2, Brian, we talked about how it was ironic that some commercials were left in these broadcasts that we can replay on the WWE Network. There's, of course, the Ico Pro commercials and then the Slim Jim commercial, a personal favorite with Macho Man Randy Savage. Let's listen in.
Chips! Gotta have beef. Gotta have spice. Need a little excitement? Snap into a Slim Jim. Oh, yeah!
And man, that flew by. It is time for our main event. Loser leaves the WWF, Nature Boy Ric Flair versus Mr. Perfect. What is your opinion of Ric Flair's initial run as it comes to a close in the World Wrestling Federation?
Was this the run that had him feuding with Macho over who had Elizabeth first? Was that part of that? Was that part of that run?
Yep, that was That was the build up to WrestleMania 8. Yep, right before this, months before
this. Months before this, right. That was great. And I remember when they first had brought him out, so Flair had made his debut. I think it was there his second week. And they had him feud right off the bat with, I believe, Roddy Piper. Because
correct.
I remember I was going out with this girl, and I'm like, yeah, you got to watch wrestle. Oh, man, you know, they've got the WWE Network, so I'm watching it. And I'm like, oh, look at this, Ric Flair. So it was like, I think it was Vince McMahon, Randy Savage, and Roddy Piper on commentary. So all of a sudden, Flair comes out in his robe with his feathers and his sequins, who jumps Roddy Piper, who was wearing a kilt, and then Macho Man was wearing some ridiculous floral thing with fringe and a cowboy hat, trying to pull him apart. And she thought it was like it was a bunch of drag queens fighting or something, right? I was like, well, no. So then I think I showed her the Undertaker, Mick Foley, Hell in a Cell match or something like that.
To cleanse her palate,
right? But I was thinking that did look pretty ridiculous, this guy with bleach blonde hair, you know, brawling with a dude in a kilt, and he had a robe, and then this dude with a cowboy hat's prying him apart. They started him out hot, and they put him with all their key players. Like we talked about in episode 2, I guess he had some kind of handshake agreement and could kind of play his own hand, and left the week after the Royal Rumble on this episode 3 of, spoiler alert, of this this loser leaves the WWF match. Oh, man, look at that ring girl. Have we talked about these ring girls yet tonight, Jeremy? Changing topic, not to spoil anything.
An upgrade from last week.
Definitely, definitely. The girl with the pink bandages was just up. Now, this one was purple. I noticed they're wearing two-piece bathing suits and exercise attire this week instead of one. One of them seemed a little bit more tan. Now, it is January, but look at Mean Gene, right? The guy looks like he's in brown face. Every time I see him come up with that, you know, the Royal Rumble report, your lips are not supposed to be a lighter color than your face. You know what I mean?
Well, here it is, the end of 2015, and I guarantee you that if you stuck a camera in front of Gene Okerlund's face, as soon as that red light turns on, he has not missed a step.
Absolutely not. Complete professional. It's in his blood. That's what he does. That's all he can do.
Ric Flair's run in WWF, as it comes to a close, lasted just about 18 months, and I, for one, loved it. I was a Ric Flair fan. I began watching wrestling on Saturday nights at 6:05 on the Superstation right around 1986. Having Flair enter the WWF was a dream come true at this point, as I was all in on the Fed by 1989. This match so far is great.
Yeah, it really is. Perfect, of course, a student. Now, well, I mean, you know, technically, who hasn't Ric Flair influenced, right? And him coming to the WWE and kind of up in the game for some of these guys, you really, with the exception of Perfect and Bret Hart, you know, you really didn't have Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, right, that could go out and put on an hour with just anybody. So Ric Flair coming in really put a lot of fire in his opponents, and he really kind of upped their games. And like you said, it was a dream come true. They didn't right off the bat go with the Hogan and Flair matchups, and I don't even recall if they had at this time. Did they even have a pay-per-view program between Hogan and Flair?
No. However, the WrestleMania 8 main event was originally announced as Hogan versus Flair. They tried the event, and they were convinced that there would be greater crowd response for Hulk Hogan versus Sid Vicious, Sid Justice at the time, and Ric Flair versus Randy Macho Man Savage. 2 weeks after the announced main event of WrestleMania 8, Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair was dropped, and you had Ric Flair versus Randy Macho Man Savage and Hulk Hogan in a possible retirement match face off against Sid Justice.
And you know how that turned out? As soon as it came to softball season, Sid had packed up. I don't know if he was on a handshake deal too with Vince or what, but boy, his run kind of came and went.
I'm also a Sid fan. We'll save that for future episodes of the Raw Retrospective. So here we are, Nature Boy Ric Flair, Mr. Perfect. These guys are going at it, and Mr. Perfect is busted open.
Yeah, I didn't even really see what, I think it was like a nasty side headlock takeover or something. He got color from something there. I always liked blonde guys with blood in their hair, right? I remember seeing all those magazines, right, The Wrestler and Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and there would be a photo of Ric Flair on the cover. He'd put on the figure four, his opponent would reverse it, he'd be begging for mercy, blood streaming down his face, and as soon as the blood would go back in his hair, and it would kind of spike up, right, like the Red Rooster from a couple episodes back, blonde guys with blood in their hair always looked awesome.
Yeah, Flair the measuring stick for that. So we talked about in episode one, Yokozuna's trunks and his variations of colors. We also then touched upon in episode two, Mr. Perfect and what our favorite color combination was. Would we be remiss with Ric Flair's last appearance on Monday Night Raw, at least for the time being, if we didn't come to a conclusion as to what our favorite color combination was for Ric Flair? Here he is wearing red trunks, red knee pads, and red boots. But man, how many options do you have to choose from if you think about Ric Flair's entire career and all of the different color combinations for his gear?
A lot. He was one of the first. He'd mix it up. You know, of course, you always had Hogan in the red and yellow. And let's see, Ric Flair. So, of course, in his last run with the WWE pre-retirement, he was fond of wearing the black trunks with the red knee pads, black boots. I didn't really like that. Everybody was kind of...
See, I'm a fan.
Did you like that? You like?
I did.
The bad. See, the thing is that whenever I close my eyes and I think of Ric Flair, okay, I think he's got the blood in the front of the hair and his hair is popped and he's doing the fish flop. And I've got to go with, they were kind of like a sky blue, like a baby blue trunks with navy knee pads. And he would either wear these like light blue boots that kind of matched his trunks. Yeah, definitely the baby blue. It's got to be the baby blue trunks and boot combos. I did like him in the green. When I think he was feuding with like Terry Funk and maybe Ricky Steamboat, he would wear all green. That looked pretty sharp.
He took many liberties. There are so many to choose from. I am not going to be able to hone in on just one. I mean, the man wore pink, the man wore purple, green, yellow, blue, black, red, you name it. But when I think of Ric Flair, as you stated, I often see him in black trunks and I see him in the royal blue knee pads and I see him in black boots.
I can get into that with the blue knee pads. The red, it was like, meh. Now, do you picture him as old Ric Flair body, or do you picture him with the lump on his back when he was kind of in shape? What do you picture him as?
This Ric Flair from this match on episode 3 of Monday Night Raw is where I eternally envision Ric Flair.
Right, me too. It's kind of like the hair really isn't quite long, and it's still kind of frayed out from the years of dying and stuff, and my earliest memories of the guy, it's not like he was super young.
No, he's well into his mid-40s here, or right. Early 40s.
I think he used to play center in college, right?
He's in good shape. He's thick. Yeah, he's right. He's in good shape.
He does. He looks really good here. And this is also kind of what the Ric Flair, the rubber Ric Flair action figure that WCW produced before they had done the things with the articulation where... Right, I think that was later on, but it was like it was kind of a takeoff of the LJN wrestling figures, right? The big rubber figures,
except yeah, made by Galoob.
Galoob, that's right. Put Galoob on the map. You know, that's another thing. Speaking of those wrestling magazines, right, that I'd always look at with Ric Flair busted open on the front, you'd flip to the back and they'd have this order form for these LJN guys. Man, it was like Hercules, Terry Funk. Man, what were some of the latest guys that... But they had all these guys that I'd never seen, that I didn't know anybody that even had them. Like, I knew
Haku.
Haku, that was it. There was a Haku. And I think they made a King Haku, too, didn't they? They made a King and a regular. Because
yep.
It was the Islanders Haku. And I remember a friend of mine had, like, the Iron Sheik.
Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, yep, there was a Warrior. I never saw him in real life. I saw Coco Beware. I did see one Terry Funk. I knew a kid that...
I have a Terry Funk.
Did you lose the Brandon Iron?
I'm sure.
As you look over on your shelf and you see him pinning the Junkyard Dog action figure, you don't see the Brandon Iron on him.
He sleeps on his own pillow next to me.
Nice.
Now, there was a rare misstep in this match that I noticed where Ric Flair is being sent off the ropes. Mr. Perfect was going to go for a leapfrog, but timed it too soon, less than perfect. And instead just turned it into what looked to be the start of a sleeper and then just morphed into a takedown. And I don't remember this. It's good to watch these things going back because Mr. Perfect, for as much as it was a gimmick, was extremely slick in the ring. That was one of his rare off moments. Can't let it bring you down. You got to keep on moving. I know that there's a episode of WWE List on WWE Network about awesome vignettes over the years. And they pretty much ruined my childhood by showing all of the outtakes for Mr. Perfect's vignettes of all of the basketball three-point shots that he missed and how many takes it took him to hit a strike in bowling.
Right, I saw that too, just maybe a week or so ago. And Yeah, that was hilarious stuff. Who could ever forget, though? Come on, the Hail Mary pass to himself.
Such awesome stuff. Is nothing sacred, though? Why do they have to show that?
I know. Somewhere those were buried, and somebody had tried to keep them hidden for that long, and, you know, they probably should have, because Mr. Perfect doing a gainer and a no-look behind the back, three-point shot and all that. Obviously, he did all that stuff, you know, might have just taken 100 takes. But Mr. Perfect, to me, I'll always remember, he'd do that thing where he'd hold onto the top rope, and, you know, you'd kick him in the back of the leg and he'd do a flip. He would do the back flip and kind of land on his face and get up and stagger around. And he had a great stand and drop kick, which I haven't seen him do in this match. And I don't think he did it as a face, oddly enough. But he would do the stand and drop kick, right? Pick the opponent up, kind of hold him by the hair and jump up and kick him while he was practically still holding him. And he'd jump up, get that nice leg extension.
That standing dropkick through genetics was actually passed on to Curtis Axel. It's about the only thing.
That is true. I can see Mr. Perfect a little bit in his eyes, you know, but with the facial hair and the kind of, right, he's maybe doesn't have the hair that Mr. Perfect did, but who does? He was one of a kind.
Oh, yeah, Ric Flair spot where he goes outside of the ropes, runs the length of the side of the ring, goes airborne off the top rope. Mr. Perfect catches him with a thumb to the eye on his way down from the top rope. It just looked gnarly.
Yeah, for years, my friends and I were always wondering what move Flair was going to attempt, right? Because he would always get cut off every time he would go to the top rope. And we're like, man, what does he keep trying to do? You know, it's... Is he going to do like some kind of, at the time we were expecting some kind of shooting star press or something ridiculous onto his opponent, because he never pulled it off, but he always went for it. So we were always like, man, one of these days he's going to get that. And I think he was in WCW and it finally happened, and it was like a flying axe handle. And it was like, that was...
underwhelming, right?
That was super underwhelming. I wish they had just kept that trend going where he gets slammed off the buckle. Super underwhelmed to think he was going for an axe handle for, you know, those 20 years.
There it is, Mr. Perfect winning with the Perfect Plex. Bobby the Brain Heenan is going ballistic as they censor whatever expletives he's rattling off. The story here plays off of the business relationship between Heenan and Flair. Bobby stated at the onset of this match that he had a financial investment in the Nature Boy and was extremely concerned about the outcome of this match throughout. Ric Flair doing the honors to Mr. Perfect on his way out of the World Wrestling Federation and back to World Championship Wrestling. That is how it's done.
Yeah, Flair showed up, made a heck of an impression, left fans wanting more, left on his own terms. That's like a boss, you know, as the kids would say these days.
Great parting shot of Rick with Bobby the Brain Heenan as he exits the Manhattan Center. And we are thrown to a WWF Mania commercial, which is so ridiculous and changes the complete tone of the program that we're watching. Let's listen into a clip.
Ah, it's Saturday morning. You just can't seem to get out of bed.
Wake up!
Now, there's an exciting new reason to rise and shine. WWF Mania. The whole family will love our stunning superstars, candid interviews, and of course, tons of great wrestling action. WWF Mania, more jolting than a cup of coffee, and it's 100% caffeine-free.
Todd Pettengill hosts WWF Mania every Saturday morning. We'll be right back. Wait till you hear the matchup we have for you next week.
You are listening to the Raw Retrospective, brought to you by the Monday Night War podcast series at MondayNightWar.com. And we are back. 100% caffeine-free is the tagline that they decided to go with for WWF Mania. What a wacky commercial, and that pretty much gives you insight into what 1993 is going to look like for the World Wrestling Federation. All those zany sound effects and the introduction of Todd Pettengill is enough to make my head spin. The show closes as Vince mentions that Flair must honor his commitment to the WWF throughout the weekend while also hyping a graphic on screen for next week's main event of Typhoon from the Natural Disasters versus Doink the Clown, in parentheses for some reason, as if we didn't know. Talk about a contrast in match quality between the main events of two back-to-back shows. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to Typhoon versus Doink in parentheses the Clown. Episode one, the main event was, Undertaker, Damian Demento. And then what was the main event of last week? Episode two. That wasn't Max Moon, Shawn Michaels, was it?
It was El Matador, Tito Santana versus the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And then so this week you had Perfect and Flair. And then now we go to Typhoon and Doink. I'm secretly hoping maybe Crush does a run in and attacks Doink. You know.
So what you're saying is that maybe we were spoiled for the past two episodes. It's about time that we spread the wealth amongst the roster.
More or less, yeah. You know, you only have so much TV time. And this week, as you can tell by the podcast length and quality and whatnot, there really wasn't a whole lot of matches to go by, right? It was the domesticated Kamala, who, by the way, did not speak out on Headlock on Hunger, claiming he battled starvation and slapping his belly. But the banner is still in the background. And I think they plugged during the show, they referenced that this Friday night at Madison Square Garden is going to be the kickoff, and I think it was just one show, of the kind of the canned food drive, the collection thing, the charity event that is Headlock on Hunger. But I believe that banner is probably going to stay up another couple months. You know, there's probably some guy in accounting that Vince got with, right, and he wrote up his assets, right? It's in the asset book somewhere, and he's got it calculated out to where that thing doesn't depreciate until, 2020 or something, right? So they've got to keep the banner up there on the wall that dwarfs everything else on the shot. But like I said, I have a feeling we're going to see that banner until, at least 2020.
Yeah, I think that banner might be covering some empty seats, so it's not going anywhere.
That is possible. Speaking of empty seats, if you notice this shot, and fans at home, I think you'll be able to enjoy this for the next couple episodes of Raw. They have X amount of seats, and there's a mezzanine that only has about three rows in it. So it looks like the capacity of the place is probably about 500 people, right? 600 people. So the last row underneath the mezzanine, the lights don't actually get all the way back there. So it's pitch black, but instead of leaving them pitch black and having people in pickpocket and gypsies and stuff back there sleeping, they backlight the back row with this glowing red background. And so you see these darkened silhouettes that kind of gives me a feeling of what wrestling hell would be like, right? Like it looks like this Dante's Inferno of tortured fan souls watching main events like Typhoon versus Doink, parentheses the Clown, and it kind of cracks me up.
Definitely not the hot ticket that WWE Raw has become today. We will return to wrap up this week's recording after a brief moment from our sponsor. We'll be right back with you.
Do you need a custom banner or logo for your Facebook, website, or blog? Or how about a video filmed and edited for your next project? Visit editahit.com for all things editing. We're dedicated to giving you the very best of video and photo editing services with a focus on quality, communication, and affordability. We are willing to work directly with you over the phone today to ensure your next project is a hit at editahit.com.
And we're back, Brian. The good, the bad, and the ugly from episode 3 of Monday Night Raw. First, we got the first noteworthy main event between two of the all-time greats. Mr. Perfect versus Ric Flair surely was a treat. What do you think?
Absolutely. Repo Man, Macho Man match, I thought, went a little bit long. They might have been able to sneak another match in there, but they definitely left enough time for that main event to kind of play out. I didn't really feel like the enormity of the situation that these two guys' careers were on the line. It was a nice match, and it's nice that we didn't get a screw job finish too. So that was another plus to that match. But it was kind of like, hey, one last chance to appreciate Ric Flair without having to tune in at 6:05 on the Superstation.
That segues perfectly to the bad. I mean, the loss of Ric Flair signals what would be quite a transitional year as far as talent and presentation goes for the World Wrestling Federation. They go from having one of the most stacked rosters in any company of any era throughout various points of 1992 to the likes of Giant Gonzalez in a showcase WrestleMania matchup versus The Undertaker.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week. The Royal Rumble for 93 was kind of like a who's that of wrestling, whereas 92 was kind of like a who's who, and a lot of that was because of Flair. And I'll actually go and put Bartlett into the bad category this week. I won't actually say he was part of the ugly, maybe because I know they're just phasing him out.
I enjoyed this week's broadcast as it seemed to whiz by very quickly. The opening matchup with Macho Man was a treat, as he was utilized very infrequently at this point with regards to in-ring action. I will even give Rob Bartlett a pass this week, but this week only. Even though the abomination that is his color commentary is present, it is offset by the presence of the talented Bobby the Brain Heenan. So we hope you enjoyed episode 3 of the Raw Retrospective. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Go to MondayNightWar.com for the full experience that the Monday Night War podcast series has to offer. Connect with the show's Twitter and Facebook page there, as well as get the link to our RSS feed. The Monday Night War podcast series is available using any device. Just plug that link to our feed, into your preferred method of subscribing, downloading, and listening. This will be a weekly series covering each episode of Monday Night Raw, and stick around for even more content as we bring you the Nitro Party, as well as the Displaced Wrestling Fan recordings. In fact, episode 2 of the Displaced Wrestling Fan is up now. This digital recording is property of MondayNightWar.com and cannot be reproduced or redistributed in any way. MondayNightWar.com, the Raw Retrospective, Nitro Party, and the Displaced Wrestling Fan recordings are not affiliated in any way with WWE. Don't forget to follow us. Let's engage on Twitter. I am at Wrestling Savant. He is at Flawless Brian. Until next week, thank you for listening.